Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Top Shelf Sports Talk. You're hanging out in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan, Rochester.
Back in the sports bar, it's Danger and Battaglia. Glad you're with us, and always excited to welcome in our buddy covering the Buffalo Bills for the Syracuse Post-Standard. Even on a bye week, we're talking Bills football with Matt Perino. And Matt, right off the top here, I got to say, I know I wasn't here last week, but I got to report back from my co-host across from me here. You're not on board with our Bruno Martino Victory Monday celebration, the listening to Italian music after a Bills win, that you found this weird, off-putting. Talk to me about this, because I want you to get with the program, pal.
I just thought that it felt like Gino was trying to wine and dime me, okay? Like, it was real, like, low tones, like a real, like, different vibe. There it is. Yeah. It's just like, I don't know. If I'm going into dinner, yeah, let's go. Let's have a glass of wine. Let's get some chicken parmesan, but we're talking football, so it's just a little bit weird. But you guys do what you want to do. There's no judgment when Matt Perino comes into the sports bar. I like everything that Gino and Danger's got going on.
Yeah, listen, here's one thing we can agree on, Matt. You may not be into this song. Don't be the media guy who waves your finger at music here.
Oh, no. I like a little music. What else you got?
That's it. Well, Matt, in all seriousness, and again, for anybody who's like, why do they do that? It literally was the day after the Bills-Cardinals win. It's a Monday, and Danger is trying to find for what. I don't know how we landed on Bruno Mars, Danger, but you hit the wrong button.
Yeah, I just grabbed the wrong thing, and all of a sudden, this classical Italian music is playing. I'm like, you know what? It doesn't sound that bad. I kind of like where we're at right now. Let's kick up our feet, maybe pour a nice glass of wine or a nice bourbon, light up a victory cigar, and this is how we're celebrating Victory Monday in the sports bar moving forward.
When I lived in Vegas, there was this like speakeasy, old school, called Capo's, and you walk in and you go to the front door, like you're going into a restaurant, and you walk in, it's just this big hollowed out room, and you're like, what's going on here? So you start looking around, and you're like looking for a door or an entrance, and all of a sudden, the guy behind the door like pops open this little like look through window and says, oh, welcome to Capo's. What's the password? Yeah. You're like, what? If you know it, you can get in. But that's the kind of music they played in there. And so, like, I'm done with the music. Just the timing. It just was a little odd.
Matt, a win over the Chiefs. And, yes, Josh Allen was impressive. The defense was impressive. Tell me your thoughts here on what Sean McDermott did. The Sean McDermott of a few years ago on 4th-and-2, actually trust Allen, trust his offense to go for it in that situation?
I thought Mike Golic Jr. had a great post on my post when I talked that after the game. I felt like this was a moment where it felt like Sean McDermott leveled up a little bit. And he quote tweeted the post with a Matrix GIF.
Yes.
It says, it's Morpheus saying he's starting to believe. That's, and I was right. Like, first of all, I'm a sucker for a Matrix gift to start with. But it makes a lot of sense. It's like all of the painful moments that, you know, this team and McDermott specifically has endured, I think you have to learn after a while that the only way to beat an aggressive team like the Chiefs is to beat them with aggression. And, you know, we all saw that movie before. Had they gone for a field goal, which, by the way, is not a chip shot and is not a guarantee with the way that Tyler Bass has been kicking the football. I know he had that really nice moment, but to miss that extra point early in that game, and oh, by the way, my game prediction, 31-21 Bills, Bass missed field or extra point, I would have had it right on the nose. So that was tough for me. But they kicked that field goal, and you turn around, it's a five-point game. You give the ball back with 2 minutes to Patrick Mahomes, and you're telling me he's not going to go drive down for seven with what we saw on the drive, the previous drive, when they went down pretty easy to score late in the fourth quarter. So I think you knew what was on the line. You knew what you had to do. I thought that the way that they moved the ball on that drive, and then a little bit less fanfare, that drive at the end of the second quarter when you're down and you're trying to get some points to go up with the lead, and then you're going to get the ball after the half, they managed that drive perfectly in the way that they used the clock. They got the ball down the field and then were able to get the 3 points. I just thought it was a big moment for Sean McDermott.
Yeah, and you're making great points. We discussed this yesterday as well. I'm curious as to if there was a moment where Sean McDermott did gain that sense of self-awareness, because let's face it, everybody watching that game knew or knows that if you settle for a field goal there and you give Mahomes that much time, they're going to score on you. But it feels like that was the first time that McDermott actually realized it and took action, and Josh took matters into his own hands because he knew he had the faith and the trust of his head coach to go out there and make a play. Was there a specific time here with McDermott over the last season or so where you think he kind of... I have one thing in my mind that I'm thinking of that, like, well, maybe now he'll become more self-aware of what he does and how he does it. And that's the Ty Dunn piece that kind of exposed him for some of the things that he said early in his coaching days with the Buffalo Bills. Is just a more mature Sean McDermott that has a little bit more self-awareness now?
Yeah, I think when you asked that question, and I got to thinking about some games that would have been maybe the impetus for a real shift. Remember that Eagles game where it felt like the Bills, and it was right around the tie piece. I think it was the week before the tie piece came out. And they were moving the ball. They were scoring points. It was a bit of a shootout, and they end up winning on that field goal. And I think that there was a little bit of a less than aggressive approach to that last drive. And yeah, who knows what the actual moment was. But I think in looking at this team, losing another one-score game to end your season last year against KC at home, to me, that should have then equaled 9 months of Sean McDermott taking a long look in the mirror. And to his credit, I think bringing in John Perry, who, by the way, early returns haven't been great in that department. Now, I did ask him about the challenge in the first half, and he said they didn't have a lot of time. They had a couple replays that they were looking at. And, you know, it turns a third and one into a third and eight. And so the advantage of that potential play there, that Sean McDermott said he'd probably do it again. And then I kind of agree with that, even though I didn't think it was a good challenge. If you're fumbling around in the moment and Perry's trying to run through a couple of different angles and you say it's close enough and the risk outweighs or the reward outweighs the risk, because it is the first half, but that's kind of a side note. And I just think that, like, Perry has not been super great in that department so far. But who knows? Maybe these are the kinds of gaffes, work-throughs, like, is that relationship is still kind of building that you need. But just the aggressiveness, it never for a moment seemed like on fourth and two with the game on the line right there that they ever even considered not going for it there. And that to me is like just the assertiveness and the confidence to go for it. And he talked about it after the game, too, saying that they spent all week going through that specific scenario around that time left with that game situation and what are they going to do in that moment. And they made that decision before they ever got to the game. And that, to me, is like the big step. Is like, all right, I'm preparing for anything that gets thrown at me, and I'm going to know what to do in the moment in a blink.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned, and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Matt Perino, Syracuse Post-Standard, and the Shout Podcast is now, Matt, we're not talking about the division. We're talking about the race for the number one seed. And look, before we get into all the issues surrounding the Bills here, oops, sorry about that. You're talking with my hands here. The Chiefs are a team that Buffalo facing just as much as a divisional opponent. And when you're looking at the Chiefs at 9-1, how does this Chiefs team compare to Chiefs teams in years past, would you say? How would you assess this race for the number one overall seed?
To me, the biggest problem that I think the Chiefs have is that their real pillar players, Chris Jones, Travis Kelce, who have been thorns in the Bills' side for years, they just don't quite seem like the same players. Now, it's a dangerous thing to say because I think we kind of said it about Kelce last year, but they're older. And as the years go on and you're facing, you know, some of these younger up-and-coming players, I mean, I thought for most of that game the other day, Osiris Torrance played really well. Baldinger put out a clip with, like, I think 12, 13 plays where Torrance was having, you know, a ton of success against Chris Jones, who dominates in those one-on-one spots. Now, Jones was also double-teamed a ton in that game, as he's going to be in most of the time, but that hasn't worked for the most part over the course of their time. So I think that's a big piece of it, and they don't have anybody else opposite Kelce that you have to be fearful for. I mean, that drive by Xavier Worthy, that was about the best drive that he's had all season, and it just didn't even really matter because his impact on the game was just that one drive where they were able to get in the end zone, and, you know, Travis Kelce really didn't do anything all game. So I think that's, to me, the biggest thing. I also think that Josh Allen is, like, if you're thinking about it in, like, the terms of, like, you know, grade school, middle school, high school, college, undergrad, then graduate school, and then PhD, like, I think Josh Allen has a PhD in going against Spagnuolo's defense at this point. Is he always going to get the upper hand and ace every test? No. But there's not a lot of things at this point going up against that Kansas City defense and that play caller specifically that he hasn't seen. So I think when you add all of that together and the newness to this offense, this is something that I was harping on all offseason. And I think a lot of people were pushing back. Like, you lose Stephon Diggs, you lose Mitch Morse, you lose Gabriel Davis. But the way they reimagine the offense with the specific pieces, we're seeing it incrementally week by week, them figuring out different skill sets. The Curtis Samuel revelation over the last 2 weeks is massive. This is exactly what they brought him here to be. And he's a defensive PI, which would have been for like 20-some yards, where he gets interfered with and doesn't get that added to his stat line. And then that short play in the flat, where he catches it and probably goes for 8 to 10 more, away from a 100-yard game with that massive touchdown late in the game. That's huge. And now you have to deal with all these different flavors and a really good, strong running game that goes three players deep. And to me, I think that's the biggest difference.
Matt, when you look ahead to what's left of this season, under the headline of it's not necessarily who you play, but when you play them, it's kind of shocking to look at the schedule now and see only one team that's above 500, the Detroit Lions, left on the Bills' schedule. That can all change, obviously, between now and the end of the season or now when the Bills play them. But just focusing in here on the next three games, you know, realistically, the Bills, if they want that one seed, probably can stumble one, maybe two more times this season. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, I haven't seen anything over the course of the last 6 weeks where if they get healthy, they can't run off the rest of the way and finish, 15-2? This Patriots team is it's got some spirit. Going on the road against the Rams and the Lions back-to-back is tough. But I also don't think that the Lions are necessarily the team that you see when they play the Jaguars, right? Like, they're probably a little bit closer to the team that barely beat Houston, that, you know, if you play well against Jared Goff and you scheme against him, that becomes a much more interesting game. I think the Bills and the Lions are – it's funny. I don't even think the Lions are, like, as good as they are. I know they're everybody's favorite team right now. But I have huge questions about Goff, and I have huge questions about that defense without Aiden Hutchinson once we get to the really important months. And so if I was power ranking the league right now, I'd probably put 3 to 4 AFC teams ahead of the Lions. And I know that probably sounds crazy to a lot of people, but they're still probably going to be underdogs. The Lions are the Lions going on the road. But if you look at the totality of this, and plus I think the Niners are the second hardest team left on their schedule. You're getting them at home and you're getting them off the bye when Sean McDermott is so dialed in and good. To me, the biggest thing is, like, how do you maintain the drive, which I don't think they have a hard time doing. I think Sean does a good job in that department, but also stay healthy over this stretch. Cause that to me is the most important thing now. Get to that. I don't really even care where they wind up, because it doesn't look like the Baltimore Ravens are going to be able to catch the Pittsburgh Steelers. You've won on the road in Pittsburgh before. You've won on the road in Baltimore too, but the way that first one went, I don't know if you want to go back there, but I still think what we've seen over the last 6 games and the high points of Amari Cooper when he's in the lineup, this is a really tough team to deal with.
Yeah, Matt Perino, Syracuse Post Standard, the Shout podcast is the Bills. The bye week is here, and then coming out of it, Matt, now, you know, obviously we'll find more information about Kincaid and Coleman and certainly Spencer Brown. The one thing they've been teeing up here is the eventual return of Matt Milano. Matt, this isn't... It's not as easy as, hey, this was a guy who was an all-pro, let's plug him back in, is it? Because you have Dorian Williams... We don't know also that Matt Milano, what level he's going to be at. It's going to be over a calendar year since we've seen him in a regular season game.
No, that's a great point. And I asked Sean McDermott about that yesterday. Like, okay, you get him back, whenever that ends up being, he's on your active roster. Is it go be the Matt Milano that you were before and, you know, go play a bunch of snaps? Or is it like you got to be careful with this and ramp him back up the right way? And he said something very interesting. He said, that's obvious. They have to do right by Milano, right? Like, get him back in a speed that he's comfortable with. But he's also got to be accountable to this defense that has played so well and the flow that they're in. To just throw a Matt Milano back in there, as good as he is, there's a disruption to that. Because now you're going to potentially have, maybe at the start, a rotation between Dorian Williams and Matt Milano. You can get creative with, when you get him on the field with 3 linebackers and maybe start to work him in a little bit more on run plays specifically because of his ability to shoot gaps and play against the run a little bit more consistently, I'd say, probably than what we've seen from Dorian Williams. Even though Dorian Williams has been really good this year, I still think that ceiling is Milano. And then you have to consider the guy hasn't played a legitimate football game since September last year, early October. So there's going to be... a level of rust, I would imagine, just like the speed of the game and getting back in that department. So there's a lot to consider when getting him back in the lineup, but that's why I think opening the window when they did, and then maybe if you could activate him this next week, he doesn't have to play against San Francisco, but he's got to be practicing, right? Like, he's got to be, once you can get that red jersey off of him and get him as acclimated as possible, that's the big piece of it, too. And they actually are sitting at 52 roster spots, players on the roster right now. I think they're holding out that spot for either him or Dwayne Carter's eligible to come back after the Chiefs game. So it'll be interesting to see how they manage the numbers here over the next couple of weeks. I would imagine Virgil, if Coleman's ready to come back after the bye, I'd imagine they try to get Virgil back to the practice squad and activate those two guys.
And Matt, another residual effect of the Bills beating the Chiefs in the way that they did, in the fashion they did, with Josh Allen being the hero and scoring that that game-winning touchdown. The MVP conversation heats up here, and it'll only get louder and louder as the season comes to its conclusion. The debate between Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, is it a debate? Because statistically, when you put the two side by side, it's Jackson. Does it come down to that, or does it come down to the team who finishes with the one seed? And if that's the case, does that matchup between the Bills and the Lions actually have some meat as well in terms of who the MVP of the league might be when it's all said and done?
Potentially. And I mean, I guess like if you're going off of recent years, last year is a great exercise in what ultimately gets you an MVP award, because Josh Allen's stats were dramatically better than Lamar's last year. And I made the argument that I thought he was probably the MVP, just knowing the production that he had and everything like that. But Lamar and the Baltimore Ravens were the one seed. And ultimately, although wins aren't necessarily a quarterback stat, they seem to be one of the most important stats when it comes to determining the most valuable player. And I think there's another piece to all of this. Derrick Henry, if you put the Bills' offensive roster and the Ravens' offensive roster in a bucket and you pick out names and power rank them, you're going to start probably with Josh or Lamar, one or two, in whichever order you have. Derrick Henry is going to be the next name that comes out of that list, and he's going to be pretty close to that tier. I don't think the Bills offensively have anybody that you put even close to that, as good as James Cook has been this season. So I think just from that perspective as well, I think Josh Allen is doing more with less, and I also think that the Bills are winning more games. And some of the losses, too, you think about the Browns, the Raiders for the Ravens. Like I think that those are huge demerits for Lamar Jackson when you're kind of putting these two guys side by side.
If you had to just kind of line up the teams, Matt, and this will be the last one for me, just by their weakness, right? Their biggest weakness, their Achilles heel. For Baltimore, I would say it's their secondary. I don't know if Trey White is going to fix that at this point there. They allow yards that would be a problem going up against a Kansas City or Buffalo. If it's Kansas City, I don't like their offensive line. I heard about that going in. We saw it right there, and sure, we can give the Bills credit, but they've got to figure that out. What is Buffalo's biggest weakness, would you say, heading into the final stretcher?
I think it's a combination of like what we saw against Baltimore, to a lesser degree against Indianapolis, and it didn't matter because Flacco was just handing the ball back to them over and over again. It's a combination of explosive running plays allowed and how that can kind of change the course of the game, specifically when the offense is kind of grinding, maybe not totaling the kind of touchdowns they usually do. I mean, that game, the Bills offense just couldn't find the right notes to be able to score enough points. They scored, I think, 10. Most of it came, if not all, in the second half after the game was kind of already out of reach. So that, to me, is the way to try to beat the Bills, is get your run game going consistently. And as good as they played against Kansas City the other day, they didn't have Isaiah Pacheco, and Pacheco was really good in the divisional round game last year in the playoffs. So that's another aspect to this matchup where it's interesting, though, because I think the Bills, if you take that game and Josh Allen doesn't throw that interception and, you know, maybe they end up going down and scoring a field goal, it's a much different feel to the game. It felt closer because of the dramatics late in the game, but I thought Buffalo outplayed them. They outgained them. They had less turnovers. It was a consistently better performance by the Bills. But if a team is able to run and force a couple explosives in that department, that's when the Bills are tested with their style of offense, the way that they want to play. They're going to rely and they're going to stay patient with their run game, even if it's not working early on in the game. And over the course of 60 minutes, they hope that it just wins out. And if a team gets up on you early, sometimes that's dangerous.
Matt, what are you and Ryan and the whole crew there at Syracuse Post Standard working on here this week that we can check out the Shop podcast at Syracuse.com?
Yeah, it's going to be mostly quiet, especially at the website. We're recording a couple shows later tonight that will air Wednesday night in our usual staple slot, and then on Friday. And the cool thing is the Friday show, we're doing a new format every week where we call it Three Big Questions, and Ryan asked me one, I ask him one, and we discuss, obviously. And then we bring on one of our insiders, our Shout insiders. They all get to put in questions. We pick out one or two every single week, and we actually bring them live on the show, on video. So, Gino, I don't know, buddy. All you got to do is become a Shout insider, and yeah, you can get on there real quick.
Oh, All right. Sign up right now. Yeah, buddy.
Give him the short code, and he'll get after it right now.
Love it.
Enjoy your weekend here, Matt.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy your week.
You got it. There's Matt Perino covering the Buffalo Bills for the Syracuse Post Standard, doing a great job here. Even during the bye week, the work doesn't stop.
No, of course not. We didn't even get to the conversation about the Jets, but it's like, whatever. It's like,
just keep pouring dirt on the Jets.
Little do we know, there is going to be two bye weeks for the Bills.
Yeah, very good.
Just a quick note here, a local sports story, because my phone was blowing up just now. You know, we're the proud home of St. John Fisher Athletics. Paul Vosburgh, the head coach since 1991, just announced his retirement for the football team.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So it's a team that went 3-7 this year. So time for a new start at Fisher. And congratulations to Coach Vos on, I mean, how many people stay in any place, in any profession that long, much less in football?
Yeah. Well, raise a glass. That's a hell of a run. Happy trails, Coach. And thanks for all you did for the community and for that program. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We've got more here in the sports. I want to talk a little bit more about that MVP race, because if statistics are a thing, the Lamar Jackson supporters have a pretty good case. I'll explain.
Okay. Talking more about Sean McDermott, can coaches grow? Can we pinpoint things? I'm going to bring in one of the experts here and play you what's being said about Sean McDermott.
Busy 4 o'clock hour on deck. We've got Amherst head coach Mike Leone. We'll talk some fantasy football with Michael F. Florio as well. All on the way before 5 o'clock here on The Fan Rochester.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. On 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan Rochester.